Hello, everyone, and welcome to this week's episode of Cast of Dice. This is episode 10. This is going to be a good discussion episode, I feel like, one that we don't usually do all that often because it's been nothing but news coming out of GW for the past couple weeks. A lot of big releases have come and gone. A lot of things have been coming out. A lot of things have been teased. So we've had a plethora of things to talk about up until now. And we're going to do a little bit more of that with Warhammer Fest having just come and gone. And there were a few releases there. But I think this is a good week to kind of take a retrospective look at a lot of the changes that have come recently with the Big FAQ and the Chaos Codex release and whatnot, because I've been able to do a lot of testing, a lot of playing, and I think it's a good time to start sharing some thoughts on different things that I'm seeing with the direction of the game and the state of the game as we know it. Again, with you this week, it's going to be myself, Joe, along with Wayne, and Draco. We're all here this week to kind of just give our thoughts about what we're noticing about the game, and it should be a pretty good episode. A lot of talking, and if you see this, whatever medium you happen to be watching this on, if you want to leave some comments with your thoughts, that'd be good too, because it's always good to know what everybody else is thinking and feeling. But I'm going to open it off with hobby progress, because I've made a lot of that recently. I've been really cracking down on my Chaos Marines. They've been coming along pretty nicely. Some of the pictures are being posted at the Instagram, so it's going to be Instagram/CTD Warhammer, so look for those coming on. I've been posting pictures semi-regularly. I gotta take a few more and get them up there too as I start finishing units. Right now basing is kind of where I'm at. I'm trying to get a lot of things based, so slowly but surely that army's coming together. Besides that, I got some demons painted. I've got more Chaos Marines built. I've got another squad of Terminators built. I think I'm going to use this unbuilt box of Chaos Marines to convert up some Possessed, so look forward to that. There'll be pictures of that as well. Wayne, have you been doing any hobbying lately? I know you said you've been busy lately.
Yeah, work's been kicking my ass, but I did manage to assemble a Chaos Chain Lord based on the Harkin model. My game store is starting a 40k Escalation League. I believe it actually starts tomorrow, so hopefully I can play in that and get some games in.
Awesome. Yeah, I saw the picture of the Chain Lord you posted. I'm probably going to throw that up on the Instagram as well.
I have to get it painted. I keep forgetting.
Yeah, I mean, it's pretty cool. Harkin's a great model for conversion purposes. I know when he first came out, I converted him into a dual Talons Lord, and it looked badass. I don't like him as a unit of himself, but he's great for turning him into other things. So as long as you don't feel like using Harkin as Harkin, you could do some pretty cool things with him. Draco, where are you at with your hobby? I know you just were telling me that you picked up a Eldar Falcon, so you'll probably be building that soon.
I didn't pick it up. I got it as a gift yesterday for my birthday.
Happy birthday.
Thanks. I actually picked up a set of Evocators on Dracolance for Age of Sigma like a week and a half ago.
Nice.
And crunched them out in 2 days because they are just awesome looking. Yeah, and like a couple coats of paint on some of my Daughters of Cain. Not much in that regard. It's been a slow couple of weeks.
Yeah, everybody's got a lot going on. I know summer's just dawning. A lot of people are getting out and about. I know me, I've been really busy with work, but whenever I'm not working, I'm sitting at my painting table trying to get more paint on these models because I want to get a fully painted army up and going. I know I've been saying that battle reports are coming soon for the channel. We did one battle report, actually. It was a test battle report, and it didn't come out too well. It was a little too lopsided for us to bother posting it. So keep looking forward to that. We're kind of getting the rest of our armies up and running so that way we could sit down and really throw together some balanced lists that can make for an interesting battle report. We don't want to throw any sort of just absolute bloodbaths on there that are just so one-sided it's not even entertaining. So look forward to that. That'll be coming pretty soon. I know my army should be ready by the end of the month, so, and that'll make for some pretty good games with my buddy's Imperial Guard, so that'll be interesting and something to look forward to. So the hobby progress, that's where it's at. The One of the big things I want to talk about today with Warhammer Fest coming and going is the different reveals that have come out for 40K. There's been a few of them. One of the big ones for me, since I play Iron Warriors, and I'll likely be dipping into this a little bit, one of the big reveals was Chaos Renegade Knights are getting their own book. So that's pretty interesting in that up until this point, they've just kind of been an analog of Chaos Knights. You just take the knight and you just get the Chaos version of it. And the only difference was that Chaos could double up on weapons where the Loyalist ones couldn't, but the Chaos ones didn't have the book backing it up. So it'll be interesting to see if GW kind of keeps them as just a mirror analog with different weapon configurations, or if they really try to separate them from their Loyalist counterparts, much like they did with Chaos Marines. I feel like they did a really good job with this new Chaos release, separating Chaos Marines from the Loyalist Marines. They're not just spiky Loyalists anymore. They feel like their own distinct thing. So I'm hoping they do the same thing for Knights, because I definitely wouldn't mind having like a Knight Crusader and two Armigers in my Iron Warriors list. I think it'd be pretty thematic for a bunch of Siegers. So it should be pretty good. Wayne, I know you've always talked about playing Knights at one point or another. How are you feeling about the Chaos Knight release?
I mean, I think they look cool, but personally, I think the game needs less super heavies, not more. However, that being said, I might pick one up. I have considered doing a knight army and doing it as House Divine, which is the one that fell to Slaanesh. But I think my wife would kill me if I'm like, hey, honey, I want to spend $500 on another army when I don't play the one I already spent money on.
Yeah, I hear you. I'm definitely going to be getting them at some point or another, just because I feel like Knights kind of socket into Iron Warriors so nicely, and being that that's my army, it just kind of makes sense. It would look pretty thematic, and I think they look cool in those colors. And I love the models. I know they're probably using the base Imperial model with different shoulder plates and stuff, much like the Forge World upgrade kit was, but they look different enough.
I wouldn't be too sure. I mean,
I'm sure the skeleton's the same.
The base skeleton should be the same, but the different leg composition and like the plates are completely different.
Well, that's what I'm saying. They likely have different plates and everything.
Yeah.
It'll look, I mean, it'll look cool. I mean, there's only so much you can do with a knight. I mean, knights are knights, whether they're corrupted by chaos or not, really. All you do with a chaos knight is add spikes to it. So, I mean, I've seen some pretty phenomenal conversions, though, of chaos knights in the past. People using the Glotkin and whatnot to kitbash a chaos knight, and those always look pretty cool. So, it'll be interesting to see how different these new knights end up actually being. I'm more interested in the rules. One of the units that I'm really excited to start using is the Kaitan Ravager in my army, and he benefits from actually synergizing with Heretic Astartes because he has their keyword. I'm going to be interested to see if the knights give me a reason to run them over my Kaitan, being that they won't actually synergize with my Heretic Astartes stuff, but maybe if they get some cool stuff of their own, they might be worth taking, so that'll be interesting. The other release, talk about big things, I guess we'll go right into the new Repulsor. What was that Repulsor called? Do you either of you remember? It was
Executioner.
Yeah, that's what I thought. So this reveal has me feeling kind of sad for Space Marine players in a way. I know in talking to a lot of Space Marine players that one of their biggest things they've been wanting is a transport. Just a transport for their Primaris guys. They want like their equivalent of a Rhino. Not many people really like the Repulsor. Every time I talk to somebody, they never seem to be happy about the Repulsor. But they always seem to be wanting transports. And for whatever reason, in GW's Infinite Wisdom, they decided to just double down and make another Repulsor that is not a true transport and is just a Repulsor with a different gun.
The Repulsor has the same transport capacities as a Rhino.
No.
It has.
I don't think so. It can only...
I think it does, but it's just the fact
that it fits 10 regular Primaris Marines or 5 Gravis Armors.
Oh, yeah. It's oh, yeah, that's right.
And the mass of guns.
It's yeah.
Because you have to pay so much for the guns that they don't take the Repulsa as a transport.
Yeah, you know what? That's right. And the reason why I was thinking it didn't is because most people I talk to want to stick aggressors in them. And you can only take 5. So I guess that makes sense. But like Wayne said before, I don't know if he said it while we were recording or not, but he said it before we were recording, that you... Oh, yeah, that's right. He was talking about the Falcon. You often don't want to be transporting in something that's also a tank because you want to be using it for different things. Rather than rushing it up the board, you want to be shooting those guns at range. Now you're stuck trying to choose what you want to do with this very expensive model. Whereas people I know have been wanting just a regular transport that they could just use as a transport and not have to worry about it also being their primary anti-tank. So that seems to be... my feelings on the Repulsor. I know a few of the people I've talked to weren't necessarily blown away by that reveal. I mean, really, it's not much of anything. It's just a Repulsor with a different gun. So,
the thing is, though, it's not going to be a transport, probably, because it's kind of like the equivalent to a Predator for the regular Marines, or like Razorback or something. So it should be able to replace main anti-tank weaponry, in a sense, if it has the rules for it.
If it ends up... Yeah.
I can see people picking this one up over the other one.
Yeah, if it ends up being an up-armored Repulsor that loses its transport capacity for firepower, then it will definitely see play. It'll be at least better off than the Repulsor was. The Repulsor in and of itself is just too expensive to be a transport. Transports get popped first turn all the time. You don't really want to put that much points into something that's you really just want to be using to cart around guys. So if this new Repulsor ends up having no transport capacity and it's just a tank, yeah, it'll see play, and I think a lot of people's opinions on it will change. I know my buddy, he'll probably pick one up then at that point, because at that point it's just a tank and that's good to have. So that'll be interesting, and it might not even be that expensive, because a lot of what you're paying for in the Repulsor is the transport capacity, too. So it could end up being even a little cheaper than the one you got, because you're losing viability or versatility that you weren't going to be using anyway. And, it could make for a pretty fairly priced Repulsor tank. So we'll see how that goes. I don't think we know exactly all its ins and outs yet. So I'll be curious to see what gets revealed from it when it starts to get closer to release date.
One thing they mentioned, they called it a heavy laser destroyer, and called it the Les Cannon's bigger, meaner cousin. So maybe strength 10 weaponry.
The laser destroyer's on a 30k Vindicator too. I think that's the weapon. It's got the Vindicator laser destroyer, but I can't remember if it has rules in 40k.
Yeah.
I don't think so. I never heard that thing mentioned before.
It doesn't.
Oh, it's a Forge World thing.
Yeah, in 30k, what it does is, I want to say, it does 2d6 damage for... Somebody was trying to explain it to me before. It does 2d6 damage if it's some sort of toughness, and then it gets better the tougher the thing it's shooting at. So it could go all the way up to 3d6 damage. Let me see if I can't find it really quick. Maybe I could just look it up. That would be the easiest thing.
It also has like a really big plasma cannon option, so...
Yeah.
I'm seeing a couple autocannons on there,
Yeah.
Twin bolter thingy up front. Some missile pods and a really big chain gun, so that's going to be a lot of firepower.
Yeah. I'm going...
I mean, the Repulsor already has a shit ton of firepower. Like, I hate fighting that thing.
If you use it as a primary tank and ignore the capacity besides, like, hovering some dudes a couple inches up the board, it can shred your face off.
Yeah.
It's just that you waste one or the other for it. It's just that's all of it.
Yeah. It'll be interesting to see what ends up coming out of it. Unfortunately, because it's a Forge World rule, I'm having trouble just finding it on a Google search because they are very good about protecting their stats and whatnot. They don't like to just let them out, so they don't often just show up on these easy to find sites. Let me see here. Toughness of a Land Raider, 3 plus armor save. Yeah. I know it's D6 damage base, but I remember reading somewhere that it gets better based off certain prerequisites. So I guess we'll just see when it comes out. They'll release the 40k variant of it. I'm sure because 30k operates off the 7th edition rule set, it'll likely be different anyway. I doubt it'll be copy and paste of what the 30k version was. So let's see here. Yeah, so I'm sure it'll be different. Just have to wait on Warhammer to go ahead and release that information. I'll be curious to see what it ends up doing. I mean, there's only so much you could go up before it just becomes superfluous. So I doubt it'll just be, hey, we'll make a Laz Cannon strength 10, because that would be very underwhelming, because it would still be wounding the same stuff on threes. So,
Don't forget, since things can be higher than 10 now, it could end up being like strength 12 or 14 or something like that, and that would make it better than a Laz Cannon.
Yeah, I mean, if it was strength 14 in particular, then all of a sudden you're wounding toughness 7 on twos. That would be a lot better, but I think anything before strength 14 would just kind of be underwhelming. So it would really depend. And it'll probably be longer range than the Laz Cannon on the regular repulsor. It'll probably be the full 48 inches or even longer. Who knows? I'll be curious to see how that ends up shaping up, though. In the meantime, I would like to talk about what I think is actually the coolest reveal of Warhammer Fest. And I think that would be the contrast paints.
Yes.
Yeah, we got to see a lot of those demoed in various videos and whatnot coming out of Warhammer Fest. I know I was sucking those up because they were popping up all over YouTube, different people showing videos of them using these contrast paints. And I gotta say, they're a game changer. From the ones I've seen, yellow and white look phenomenal. And I know those are two colors that people historically tend to struggle with. But you lay those paints down on that new primer, and they just, the work does itself. I mean, the yellow comes out nice. It shades itself. It looks clean. Same with the white. I couldn't even believe it. It looked so good. Really, the only one that I still am reserving judgment on is the black, because I have yet to see a really good picture or video of someone using the black. It almost looks like it comes out like a dark gray, which personally I don't mind, because I prefer that over a straight black, but these paints are looking pretty cool. I don't know, what do you guys think?
I think they look amazing. Like, I'll put it this way, looking at the white and the yellow, I'm seriously debating doing Imperial Fists or White Scars, because I can use those paints and I don't have to worry. The white especially, if you saw the picture of it.
Oh yeah. The white looks amazing.
Yeah,
it was definitely one of my favorites, that and the yellow. But also I noticed the pastel colors look really good. Like a lot of those like dull pinks, the purples, a lot of the Slaanesh colors looked really, really good too. So demons, I think, are going to be the biggest winner of this release, because they just lend themselves to this kind of paint so well. Painting up a demon army is going to take like a day.
Between my, 150 models of Tyranids and, like, my potentially going up to 100 models of Seraphon, I am very likely to go look at those paints when they're coming out, so...
Yeah.
Yeah.
Tyranids will be good, too, because you really need pick two colors that look good. One for the skin, one for the...
Yeah, skin, carapace, done.
Yep.
And then maybe add some little details on, you know, the little pink fleshy bits of the guns or whatever, which Okay, like, who cares about those, teeth, you know? Maybe. Yeah.
It's gonna be...
They did have a bone contrast paint, though, too, so you could probably just add that to the bone parts of it, and there you go.
I would so pick up a bone, because I have many stuff that uses bone colors.
I think it's called.
I know the bone primer. One of the primers is bone too. One of the new primers.
Oh yeah, Wraith Bone.
Yeah, so you could theoretically just pick your two colors, do the carapace and do the skin, and then just shade over leave the teeth, and then just shade over the teeth once you're done with like Agrax or something, and you're done.
Yeah,
there was a picture they showed of I think it was Wraithguard with like this light bluish aqua color. Looked freaking amazing.
Yeah, I remember seeing that. A lot of the pictures I've seen have been of Space Marines too, and I think they actually make out pretty good in this as well, because this paint, for whatever reason, more so than others, seems to lend itself very well to flat panels. So it boggles my mind, but it's super cool. I mean, I really hope it ends up being as cool as it looks, because I think it's really going to be a game changer for people getting tabletop armies painted and ready quickly. I know if I had access to those paints, my demons would be done. My Chaos Space Marines would probably be done already. It'll be interesting. The only thing I haven't really seen yet is the metallics, and apparently there are metallics, but I haven't really seen any yet, so I'll be curious to see how they look on a model. I'm not exactly sure how well they'll work. If they do look great, then I'll probably switch over to using those for the rest of my Iron Warriors, but we'll see.
Where I can see a really big issue is like with high and fine detail amounts. Yeah. Like Thousand Suns, I don't see that working for them at all.
I see it working for their panels, but you'll still have to go back to other paints. And
yeah, no, it's like the shoulder pads at most would profit from it, but I have to go over so many edges and intricate what's it called? Decorations.
The trim.
The legs have this extra padding in front on the shin, and like the shoulder plates are really fine detailed. It's like a nightmare for something like that. Like, I can't just go over it. I have to really pick it out.
Well, I mean, technically you could just paint your primary color over the whole model, and then it'll practically shade itself, and then you just go over with your trim color and you pick out the trim. But
it depends on the paint job, because I'm going for a black armor and like bronze edging and trimming, so yeah, that doesn't work, sadly.
Gotcha.
I know they had something that was a bluish green, and I'm like, maybe Alpha Legion.
Yeah. Yeah.
I don't know.
Hail Hydra.
It could be. I mean, I still have that color shift paint from Green Stuff World, which is awesome, by the way. Eventually, I'm going to do an Alpha Legion army, and I'll probably end up using that just because it looks so cool. But
that did look really cool.
Yeah.
It is.
Yeah, it's pretty awesome paint. But yeah, I'm really excited about these contrast paints. Apparently they're coming out in June, so hopefully my local game shop gets them in a timely manner. I'm sure, being just a new paint range, I'm sure they're just going to churn them out. It's not like models where you need a mold and stuff. You're just kind of filling up bottles. One thing I will say, being on the topic of paints, I'm really disappointed in GW's insistence on sticking to the dropper, not getting dropper bottles. Why they continue to put new paint in pots is beyond me. Every other major company has moved over to dropper bottles. Pots are horrendous for so many different reasons that I'm not even going to bother listing them here. But
I think P3 is the only one that still uses.
Complaining about is like, I have always this shitty clock at the backside of the pot.
Yeah.
Jesus Christ.
I've heard that's intentional.
And probably.
Actually read that it's intentional to make it dry out quicker so you buy more.
Yeah, I mean...
Well, that's just dickish.
I believe it.
GW.
It's also poorly designed, so you spill your shit all the time and then you have to buy more. I don't know how many pots of Agrax Earthshade I've had to buy in the past couple weeks, but...
Rip.
It's been a lot. That, Null Noil, and Seraphim Sepia. I've spilled a pot of each of them, so...
Wow.
Yeah, it's because I'll be trying to close the cap with one hand while doing something else, and then the pot will just fall over for no reason, and everything will spill, and then I get upset, and then nobody wins. Nobody wins in that scenario.
I think my big problem with it is, like, their paints are amazing, but it's the fact that they charge more than everybody else, and they give the least amount of paint. Like, everyone else is at least 17 milliliters, usually 17 and a half, and GW is, like, a buck more, and it's 12.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm not a fan. I'm not a fan of the pots. I'm not a fan of anything that's going on. I mean, I'm looking at my Army Painter Quick Shade Dark Tone right now, my shade that I've been using from Army Painter, and this shade is phenomenal. I like it a lot better than I like Nuln Oil, and I get a lot more of it. It goes a lot further. I thin it down, and it goes over nice and smooth, gets into all the recesses all nice. Nuln Oil has a tendency to kind of stain everything it goes on. I mean, it looks good depending on the look you're going for, but with the Army Painter, because it's in a dropper bottle, I can control how much of it I'm putting in a little palette to mix, and it just gets so easy. And then the other thing that boggles my mind is GW's Air line of paints. How are they expecting us to get paint from a pot into an airbrush? I mean, I understand I could buy dropper bottles, but I mean, come on. Like, at least your air... Yeah, I mean, at least your air paints should be in dropper bottles, so that way I could just squirt them into the airbrush, but whatever. That's neither here nor there. Maybe one day they'll switch over to dropper bottles. I know that was what I put for, like, 90% of my answers on their survey, so we'll see. I mean, besides that, there's nothing else for me to really complain about this year, because they just updated my entire army finally after 20 years, so... Yeah, so really all I had left to complain about was dropper bottles, so I made sure I put that up for every answer. So that's that. So what other major releases have come out of Warhammer Fest besides the paints, knights, transports?
Transport.
Yes. Speaking of transports, since we were talking about them earlier, AdMech is finally getting a transport, much to AdMech players around the world's glee. They can finally rejoice in the fact that they'll be able to transport their Electro Priests and whatever else AdMech players feel like transporting. I know that's been a big complaint about AdMech players for a while now. A lot of them have wanted transports for a long time. And they're finally getting their wish, so that's good. It looks kind of silly to me. I do think it fits their aesthetic, but to me it looks like they're about to storm the beaches of Normandy. I don't know if you've ever seen... Yeah. I don't know if you've ever seen old World War II videos, but the thing looks just like those boats that dropped off the soldiers onto the beach. So, but it,
basically,
yeah, it fits their aesthetic. I mean, it definitely fits their...
I always think of those ice hover boat thingies that work with air.
The,
you know
what I mean? The,
I don't got the name right now, but they use those in, like,
Like the fan boats, like you see in, like, bayous?
Yeah, something like that.
Yeah, maybe. I mean, obviously this is a grav boat thing, but it's definitely based off of the old transports from World War II that you saw.
Yeah.
Or those boats that, you know, Coast Guard uses to pick up immigrants that are floating in the ocean or something. I mean, it's usually some sort of rescue vehicle or some sort of war vehicle that you see that has that kind of distinctive shape with the back hatch that goes down and they kind of storm out of it. I know the first thing that came to my mind was World War II, so that's the primary thing I'm going with.
It looks like that. It has that, like, it's like if it's like they saw they found some lost footage or something from that, and they're like, hey, that looks really cool.
Yeah. Hey, that's going to be an AdMech transport. Let's do it. And then all of a sudden...
I mean, knowing AdMech, though, that probably is what happened.
Yeah. Yeah, probably. They saw Saving Private Ryan. They thought it was a... What are those blueprints called?
STCs.
Yeah, they found one of those. Yes. They found one of those, and they thought that it was that, but it ended up just being an old Blockbuster copy of Saving Private Ryan. And and they played it, and they were like, oh, new technology. So they decided to copy it. So, hey, it's whatever. AdMech finally gets transports. I think it looks silly, but that doesn't necessarily mean it looks bad. I mean, I still think it looks good. So, and it definitely fits their aesthetic. So, good for AdMech players. They got their transport.
The tank version looks kind of better, in my opinion.
Yeah, yeah. Either way, I think AdMech players will definitely be putting it to good use. It definitely seems like something they needed. So, that'll be good. I'll be curious to see more things about it when it comes out. Its full stat line and weapons and everything. I think that'll be really interesting. Besides that, as far as 40K news goes, really the only other thing that kind of... I guess it's kind of technically 40K, but would be Apocalypse. They finally showed off of the box for Apocalypse at Warhammer Fest. Do we have a hard release date for that yet?
Not that I can think of right now, no.
Yeah, I don't remember seeing one either. So we just know. Yeah, we just know that Apocalypse is coming.
Probably, but like probably later. Yeah, later this year at Warhammer World, you have the chance to help us break the record for largest. So before Warhammer World.
Yeah. Okay. When's Warhammer World usually?
Let me just check.
Yeah, you get on Googling that because I'll be curious. It'll at least give us somewhat of a time frame. Either way, I think it's going to be pretty interesting. I know I enjoyed Apocalypse games back in the day, even though they took like a week. So.
August. It's in the fucking life block. I just overread it. It's on the picture.
Okay, perfect.
I was going over the text like, where is it, and the picture just flew past.
So, okay, so this summer, it'll be coming out at some point, so it's really not that far off. Probably a month or two, at most.
Yeah.
So that's cool. I'll be interested to see all the rules for Apocalypse, so that's always fun.
The army rules are going to be free, so that's something.
Yeah.
It's just the game mode rules in the box.
Yeah. Yeah, I'll be curious to see all this stuff. I wouldn't mind getting some good Apocalypse games in. So hopefully...
It should be interesting for, like, the occasional... Because right now, I mean, like, whenever... I have a friend who likes to play Apocalypse games, and it's, like, 8 hours or something, and they get to turn 3. So anything that makes it faster is good.
A little more streamlined.
Right. We have a yearly Apocalypse game in our store, in my local store. Every time, I think the last... open day of the year in December before the holiday break we play, and it's always the entire day, and we're having a fucking blast, and I can't wait to get to it this year.
Oh, that sounds really cool. Yeah.
Yeah, it's everyone brings his Titans. I bring my entire collection, basically. It's just fun.
I know a lot of stores by me do a huge Apocalypse game on New Year's Eve, and it kind of is supposed to run up until New Year's, obviously, so it's like a celebratory game. So I might try to make that this year myself, and it'll be fun with the new rules. So hopefully I can make it and I don't have to work, but that's my life. That's what I signed up for. So unfortunately, I'm always working. And when I'm not working, I'm painting. When I'm not painting anymore, I'll be happy. I'll have so much free time. I won't know what to do with myself. I can't wait to get my army painted. From now on, I'm never buying anything until I paint what I have first. I am never getting this far behind again in my life. This is the worst feeling ever. To all of you folks out there listening, paint what you have and then buy more. Do not sit on mountains of gray plastic. It is not a good feeling. It will upset you. So, speaking of my army, that's going to segue me into the last thing I want to touch on today. Just a few kind of discussion points I'd like to talk about. A lot of things have come out in the past couple weeks with the Big FAQ and the Chaos release, and I just kind of want to go over and kind of discuss some things that I've seen since I've been playing and testing a lot of different units. I've had a chance to fool around with a lot of things, and I'm going to be talking from a Chaos Space Marines perspective, particularly someone who plays them pure. I don't really soup. So I'm sure a lot of people out there will have different opinions than me on these subjects, and you guys could chime in too, because I know each of you play your own flavors of Chaos, so if you have your own feelings about these particular units, please just step in at any point. But overall, after testing the Chaos Space Marine Codex, I have found that this codex is actually quite solid. I am very, very happy with this book, mostly because I find myself, while I'm building lists, to struggle with all the choices that I have. There's so many different things that I want to run that I'm omitting units that previously would have been auto-include, like Obliterators, for instance. I know there's some controversy over the cost of Obliterators being too high at 115, and to that end, I will agree. I don't think they're a bad unit because they're 115. I definitely think they do work, but at 115 points, and for what they do, you really still kind of want to take all three to maximize their effectiveness, and that's a pretty big investment, 345 points. There's just so many other things I'd rather be running with that 345 points that I end up omitting Obliterators because I just don't feel like making that kind of point investment. And I think that's good for our book, because it means we have a lot of choices, a lot of viable choices, where 345 points isn't something that I could just plug with our best unit. It's actually, there's actually things that make me say, I don't know if I want to run this. I kind of want to run this. And having to really quibble over that amount of points is pretty cool. It's a nice feeling to have so much freedom in list building. So I've really been enjoying running different things as Chaos. Wayne, have you been making any lists lately?
I've been throwing around a lot of ideas. I would definitely agree with you that what I like the most about the Codex is there are a lot of viable options. I mean, of course, you have your hardcore min-maxers that are picking and choosing the best of the best, but most of it seems really solid to me.
Yeah, in a casual environment, there's not many units that I wouldn't take. I mean, even Possessed kind of have a place now if you run them correctly, if you run them in a certain list and support them properly. I know they were much maligned before. I mean, really the only unit at this point that I think doesn't have a place at all would be Mutilators. With Obliterators having melee weapons now, Mutilators are practically useless. They didn't get a new model, so it's pretty obvious that GW is just going to phase them out. They're probably not going to be a thing anymore, which is fine. I mean, they are pretty bad, so there's no real reason to have them. Warp Talons are another unit that usually kind of gets picked on, and Raptors. They're not the best, but in casual environments, you could throw them into a host raptorial and they could do work with any of the various jump lords out there. So there's really not much out there that's bad. Cultists, I will say, have been very hit or miss for me lately, and that's fine. I mean, cultists, I never wanted cultists to be some must-have powerhouse unit like they've been. The only thing that kind of bugs me about cultists now is I think now that they can no longer take Legion traits and they are capped at 30, I think they should go back down to 4 points a model. I don't think they're worth 5 points a model anymore. They're still auto-take because they're still marginally better as far as kind of sitting on points, which is what you want your troops to be doing, than Chaos Marines. But even still, if they were 4 points a model, I would take one unit of them, which I think is fine, but I wouldn't really feel the need to take more because I don't think they're as great as they once were. They're still really good and still perfectly viable in lists, but I don't think they're the end-all be-all that they used to be. So that's good. I think cultists are in a decent place now. I would just like to see them dropped back down to 4 points a model. I also wouldn't mind them losing Veterans of the Long War either. I think it's kind of silly that cultists can take advantage of Veterans of the Long War. And if they did that, they would definitely have to be 4 points a model. And then I think they'd be perfect. So it'll be interesting to see what GW ends up doing with them. I doubt they're going to change them much more, but I would like those changes to happen. One of the other units I'd like to talk about is the Lord Discordant. I know we spent a lot of time talking about him on various episodes leading up to now, and I've tried various different builds around him, because I only have one. So I've tried running him with Venom Crawlers, with Mauler Fiends, Defilers, Forge Fiends, and one of the things I have found is that I don't really like the Lord Discordant's ability to buff the other demon engines. And I say this because if you're only running one, you struggle to keep, say you're running two Defilers and a Mauler Fiend, it's really hard to keep all three of them in the aura at the same time and have them all be benefiting, especially if you're trying to utilize the advance and charge stratagem that comes in the Soulforge pack, because you're usually just yeeting one demon engine right into the enemy on turn one, so he's already out of the bubble, and then the other two, because of terrain and everything else, it's so cumbersome trying to get such a large footprint where it needs to go and keep it all together. To that end, because the Lord Discordant is so cheap, and he's not even that he's cheap, but he's really only 30 points more than a Mauler Fiend, but he's got significantly higher offensive potential. You just run three Lord Discordants. His buff is almost a red herring in a way to me, in that you think you want to run him with demon engines to make him better, but it still doesn't really make demon engines better, and all it does is hold back the Lord Discordant. You're better off just running three lords and let them all do their own thing, and that buff just helps them proc Death to the False Emperor on a 5+. So that's how I've seen a lot of success with the Lord Discordant, is in running multiples of them. I know a lot of other people have been kind of coming to that same conclusion that I've seen. It's just kind of better to take them in a Supreme Command attachment and run them as themselves, and they can get a lot more work done, and they're easier to get around the board. One thing I want to try is I want to take three of them in a Supreme Command and put a Kaitan in the Supreme Command. Yeah, because... Yeah, because at that point, all three of them are kind of doing their own thing, and the Kaitan is pretty self-sufficient on his own, too. He's already hitting and wounding on three, or hitting on threes, both shooting and melee. So he's already hitting better than Demon Engines anyway, and I could just pop the Demon Forge stratagem on him and have him reroll everything. So he could be the one I yeet into the line turn one and cause all that havoc, and then the three Lord Discordants can beta strike turn two, and they can do their thing. And I think that's a much more efficient way to use Lord Discordants, because I'm just in, and I've tested it multiple times, I'm just not seeing the viability of running them with demon engines. It's usually the demon engines are still pretty disappointing as far as how easily they could be killed, and a Master of Possession can't keep up with the melee demon engines, and the Lord Discordant wants to be in melee, so trying to keep a Master of Possession up with all your demon engines that are running forward is just next to impossible. So there's not really much help for the regular demon engines, which is unfortunate because I thought this was going to make them a lot better, but it's still kind of one of them things where I might as well just run this one really efficient unit, because its buff doesn't help them enough to make them worth just not running more of the Lord Discordant. So that's kind of my thoughts on it.
I've seen people say that, and I mean, it's a very interesting idea, because if you think about it, the Lord Discordant is a mini demon engine himself.
Yeah, and it's not even that he's that mini. I mean, I've gotten him into combat numerous times, and I can guarantee you that he's killed a lot more than my Mauler Fiends have, even with the buffs. I mean, I've had one time where a Mauler Fiend got in while being buffed, and I mean, he kills things, but he's got four attacks with his fists on, you know, top profile. So those will usually kill at least three guys if he gets in on them. And then he's got six other strength six attacks with his Lasher Tendrils. So even right there, if you run him into a tank, it's really only the fists that you can rely on to do damage to it. And you often want to throw them into infantry, which then the fists are being wasted. So it's... Mauler Fiends are still kind of weird to me. And like I said, I'm having trouble moving them around boards with a lot of terrain and keeping them in that bubble. So whereas you just run a Soulforge pack with three Lord Discordants and a Kaitan, those Lord Discordants can all go off in different directions, and it doesn't even matter. They can all do their own thing. So yeah, I'm not seeing his viability. The only place I could see him being viable leading demon engines, and I haven't had a chance to test this myself yet, because I think it's still kind of a waste of the Lord Discordant, and it's expensive, is to have him supporting kind of a Forge Fiend castle, because then the Master of Possession can help out. So, I mean,
you're losing the melee, yeah.
Yeah, yeah, and then you're losing.
That brings up a point, though. What about, it wouldn't be as good, but if you had a Forge Fiend castle with the Master of Possession, you're not getting the plus one, but you can get the rerolls and the, what, plus one to invulnerable, and then have the three Lord Discordants.
Yeah.
That's kind of a choose your poison, which do you want to die from?
Yeah, I mean, it is true. Could leave the Forge Fiends back with just the Master of Possession and let him kind of just give them some rerolls and hope they hit on their fours.
What I'm thinking, it's probably more like, if you really want to run a Lord Discordant with some Mauler Fiends, the Voice of Logger.
Yeah.
It does enhance the aura by, I think, 3 inches.
3 inches, yeah. It's,
and he has a pretty big base by himself already, so.
Yeah. It still all depends on the terrain that you got going on.
Yeah.
Because a lot of times you kind of want to be able to split up your demon engines, because if you're focused all in one spot, it kind of lets your, that many points focused in one spot, it kind of lets your opponent kind of dictate the board state. They can move around and you can't. You're kind of tied to that Lord Discordant. Even if it goes up to 9 inches, it's still kind of a tight bubble. And it's still kind of hard getting them all together in a round terrain, especially if you're trying to use that advance and charge stratagem that comes with Soulforge Pack. One's always going to end up getting ahead of the others. Now, that would bring up that if you ran them alongside Slaanesh demons, then they all can advance and charge. It might be a little easier. You get them all through the terrain into your opponent's side of the board, and then you kind of all charge them and meet back up after the charge. That could be viable. That's something I still need to try. I don't actually have Slaanesh demons yet, so I do want to try that as well before I completely give up on the idea. But I do think that I'm still going to find that I might as well just run three Lord Discordants. And it's not even that I want to do that. I'm probably not actually going to do that. But I know in the back of my head, I'm always going to know this is just better. There's really no reason to run these other monsters.
Also, in hindsight, I maybe would have liked if they would have given the Mauler Fiend something like a attack mode for his fist, like swipe and strike.
Yeah, maybe.
That would have probably saved his hide. Could trade his one punch for like two attacks at half strength.
Yeah, but that's supposed to be what the Lasher Tendrils are for, so it's...
Yeah, I know, but it's like, it's weird.
Yeah, he is kind of a weird beast.
He's very schizophrenic with his attacks.
Yeah, because usually whatever you're charging at any given time, half of his attacks are not optimal. So, because one is sitting on that awkward strength 6 stage, and the other one is obviously strength 10 plus, whether it be 12. I think it's, yeah, because he's strength 6, so times 2. At his top profile, he's strength 12. So, yeah, I mean, he's really good if you get him, you get diabolical strength off on him, then he goes up to strength 7, and then all of a sudden, you know, he's threatening everything pretty well within the same range, so.
You can always multi-charge, so you get a tank and some infantry.
Yeah, you could, which would be ideal, but a lot of that's in your opponent's...
Fucking up his positioning, so unlikely.
Yeah, I never want to be in a position where I have to rely on my opponent to fuck up. That just means that you're not playing your best if you're counting on your opponent having to dictate your moves. So, more testing is going to come.
I always play very reactive with most of my armies.
Yeah.
But that is because I usually can allow myself to basically wait and bait.
Yeah.
It's the main tactics for Tyranids. I start with Tyranids. I just apply that tactic to everything.
Yeah. It's Some armies are better at being reactive. Some armies are better at being proactive. I do think Chaos is more of a proactive army right now in the way it's set up. So it wants to be the one kind of dictating the tempo. There are armies that are better at kind of reacting. I think one of those would be Gene Stealer Cult are definitely better at being a reactive army.
Yeah, with the redeployment, they just...
Yeah, so... So everybody's got their pros and cons. Like I said, more testing is going to come. I would really like to test them out with Slaanesh Demons because I think that actually opens up a lot of tactical possibilities. I know that the Soulforge pack wouldn't be needed because I wouldn't really need that advanced charge stratagem. I'd probably still use it anyway, though, just because...
For the movement.
For the movement buff, and also the fighting at full profile is always a decent... stratagem as Knight players knew. And that kind of segues me into something I kind of want to talk about now, in that the Castellan nerf is another big thing I've been noticing over the past, I'd say, 2 weeks, at least since Big Fact dropped. Every time I've seen a Castellan played, I don't play them personally because I don't play Knights, but I've seen a lot of people play Knights, and the Castellan in particular. And I gotta say, I have to feel like it was over-nerfed. I think GW reacted super strongly and was kind of heavy-handed in the nerf. And I think it ended up exactly like how I said it would many weeks ago on a different episode, in that really the only person it hurt was Knight players. It doesn't actually fix the issue. Because I always said that the problem wasn't the Knight Castellan itself. I always felt that the problem was more that the Knight Castellan could use guard CP. Right now, I'm seeing Knight Castellans barely do anything. Going up to the 4-up invuln would have been enough, but now that they're 100 points more expensive, lists are further restricted. So any Knight that's taking a Castellan is usually... That's usually it. So everybody knows just to shoot at it. And now it's only got a 4-up invuln, so it goes pretty fast. So I think it was over nerfed. I don't know what you guys think.
They may have overshot the spot that would have been fine. Like maybe the 4+ invuln and like 50-point increase would have been better.
Yeah, I don't even think it needed a point increase. I think the points were fine. I think the invuln change would have been okay enough.
I disagree there. He was very point efficient. Very point efficient in the beginning. Even without the stratagem. And the 3+ invul and the fighting at top bracket just was the cherry on top for his immense firepower to just blow everything away. I think a small point increase would have been in order, and the 3+ invul nerf, debatable. I say yes, because that big a unit should probably not have a 3+ invul. That's basically my point on that.
I mean, plenty of things do, though, but I understand something that big shouldn't have a 3+ invul, and now he doesn't.
It may sound hypocritical because I play Thousand Suns and I have basically a 3+ invul on my infantry if I do it right. But here's the thing. I fail that once and I lose one. I fail that 3 times, I lose basically half my squad. So I lose firepower far more frequently than a Castellan Knight with his fail saves.
Yeah, I mean, I've never argued that the invuln save should have stayed at 3+. I think the invuln being capped at 4+ is what's fair. I mean, they did it to demons. They're doing it to everybody. And I think that's fine. I just think that was really the only change that would have needed to happen, because you take away that 3+ and make it a 4+, and it's kind of surprising how big of a difference it makes and how easy it is to take down the Castellan now. So... I think the double whammy of making it easier to kill turn one and then also restricting your list building was a bit heavy-handed. And really, the only person it hurt was Knight players, pure Knight players who already... I mean, Knights were good. They were kind of a... I'd say they were a gatekeeper army as far as the competitive meta is concerned. Like, they were always in the game, but, I mean, you never saw pure Knight armies topping tables or anything. So now the competitive players are just going to move on to the next hotness, and meanwhile it just leaves Knight players broken in the dust, kind of like how Blood Angels players were for a while, until GW, with the Big Fact, finally now reverted that change. which is one of the other things I wanted to talk about. Bravo GW for turning that change back, because the game feels a lot better now that you could charge over infantry again. I thought that was a stupid change to begin with. I don't really know what you were thinking, so I'm glad that's changed back. It feels good to be able to charge over infantry again. I know a lot of people that played heavy melee armies enjoy it too, so that's a good change in my opinion. Wayne, have you had a chance to see any of these changes in action yet?
No, and I mean, no one that I'm aware of here played the Castellan anyway, but I agree with what you said. I think it was like 70 points undercosted. I think 100 is too much, but you hit the nail on the head earlier. The problem wasn't the Castellan, it was the Castellan using CP generated by the Loyal 32, and they seem to completely refuse to fix the CP sharing, which is the real problem here. Feels like they're just doing these band-aid fixes without actually understanding what the problem is.
Yeah, I mean, if they want the game to be all-inclusive like that and just ally whoever and use whatever, then you got to balance your books around that. But it's clear that the codexes are internally balanced. They're not balanced for... like, nobody made the Knight Codex knowing that people were going to be using Guard CP for all the stratagems. They were obviously balanced around Knight armies. So either balance the books around this soupy mess that you've created, or balance the game around the books. I mean, you can't have your cake and eat it too. You would have to either restrict stratagems to whatever. I think only your warlord's army should be able to use stratagems, because that just makes sense. Like, your warlord's the guy in charge. He's the one making the orders, and the stratagems are just kind of like your warlord's tactical acumen. So
I would agree.
Yeah, whoever your warlord is, he's the one issuing the stratagems. I think that would be the best way to go about it. Because as of right now, the books aren't balanced around all this sharing, and that's why you see all these exploits and all these blatantly imbalanced things come about, like the Castellan using just constant pools of CP. The Castellan was fine when he could only use... he would blow all his CP in a turn of shooting and then be unable to do it anymore. Like, it was kind of risk versus reward. But you start taking that away, now all those fail safes that you had in that otherwise would have made the book balanced are now out the window. So, exactly. Yeah, I mean, it's just a matter of how they've been balancing books. They have to choose exactly how they want this game to go forward and stick to it and start balancing the books around that, because right now it's kind of a mess. So, I mean, the new books have been pretty good. I know with Chaos in particular, since that's what I have the most experience with, I don't feel even the need to soup. I feel like it's perfectly viable on its own, so... a lot of my stratagems I'm finding I'm using, and they're, while Endless Cacophony and stuff is powerful, I blow through CP pretty quick with my Chaos army. So it's I think it's getting better, and I think they are moving towards the right end goal. It's just very slow and painful the way they're doing it. So hopefully things start to get a little better, because I'm sick of seeing units and people's armies nerfed because of competitive play. And then the only ones left there actually feeling it are the people who are dedicated to these armies, your pure knight players, your Chaos Space Marine players. Like, even if you can even call people that anymore, I don't even know if people identify as that anymore. It's just like, I'm an Imperium player, I'm a Chaos player. But that aside, I mean, those people are the only ones who are actually feeling these changes. The competitive players just find whatever soup ingredient hasn't been touched yet, and they just move to that. And then they get that nerfed. So it doesn't actually fix anything. And I agree with you there. It doesn't fix anything. It's like a small band-aid that forces the meta to shift real quick. And then something else just starts getting abused because they're not fixing the root issues within the core rules. So,
I mean, I appreciate that they're fixing problems. But it seems like, and it seemed like this for a while, they're knee-jerk reacting to... but the big tournament show, and it's, oh, this is dominating the tournament, let's nerf that. And it's like, it's dominating the tournament, but it's not just that. Like, look at why it's actually dominating the tournament, instead of saying, everyone's taking this, let's reduce it. Well, that might be a solution, but in this case, it basically, you hinted on it before, the min-maxing players don't care. They're just going to be like, okay, they nerfed this. Like, I've seen people say that it's, literally, they have stated, the Castellan is garbage, like, unplayable garbage now because it's not broken.
Yeah.
And that's ridiculous.
Yeah. I mean, it, and really, you can't blame the competitive player for it, because the nature of competitive wargaming, and just anything competitive, is you take your best chance for victory. So if something no longer becomes your best chance to victory, obviously you're going to discard it. So it's not really their fault. That's more the fault of GW seeming to be pushing for 40K to be an eSport, when really I don't think it should be. But that's actually going to be a discussion for another day, because I would actually like to have a long discussion about that topic for an entire episode. So we'll get to that eventually. Yeah, I think the Castellan changes were a little heavy-handed. A lot of the other changes in the Big Fact were good, though. Like Eldari not being able to share Craft World powers now. That was awesome. I mean, that's oh, yeah. Right there, that's showing the direction they want to go. It's obvious, like I said, they're moving towards the right goal. It's just they're doing it very slowly. It's pretty obvious that they're starting to revert back to kind of single codex armies, but they can't, for whatever reason, they can't do it all at once, so they're doing it piecemeal, which is painful for the rest of us, but I guess they have a reason for doing it that way, so I'm going to wait and see before I get too critical of them, because it does seem like they're moving in the right direction. But yeah, a lot of these changes were good. A lot of things were clarified. I've been able to play with a lot of things now. Like I said, the charge change, charging while with flying, great. The Castellan nerf, bad. Eldari powers, good. A lot of those changes. Death Watch is one that I'm just going to touch on real quick. I don't think that change was really necessary. Death Watch is another army that I didn't think was really over-dominating. I don't know why they couldn't keep their special issue ammo and have Boulder Discipline. They're still Marines, just like anybody else. Just because they change the ammo that's in their magazines doesn't mean they all of a sudden lose their discipline. So I don't really understand why they needed that change. I didn't think they were overly broken with it. But I can't speak for GW. I don't know what they're doing in their infinite wisdom. The Grey Knights change with the Grandmaster Dread Knight getting capped at a 3+. They at least did him the favor of not capping him at a 4+ like everybody else. They at least let him keep a 3+ invuln save. So they must feel a little bad for Grey Knights. Although Grey Knights did just top a GT in Australia, so it's only a matter of time before Grey Knights get nerfed. So sorry, Grey Knights players, your days are numbered. Besides that,
always Australia.
Yeah, Australia's just got a whack meta.
They always play stuff weird. Like, even when I played Wormahordes, like, everyone in the America and, like, North America was like, oh, well, this unit's garbage. And then the Australians would be like, no, this unit is great. Like, we use it all the time. And I don't know what it is, but it seems like they play in a completely different... Maybe they're just better players. I don't know.
Yeah, I mean, it very well could be.
Strokes.
They could be better players, or their meta could just be so radically different that different units are good, because it does really depend on the meta of why certain units are good.
I mean, you always have to consider it's like the economy. They pay far more for their models, so maybe they gravitate towards small elite armies more.
Maybe.
It could just be representation.
It could be, but I know a lot of Australians who play Hordes. I know in that GT alone, I mean, there were Orc players, there were Tyranid players, so, I mean, somehow Grey Knights managed to win. I mean, apparently the person who played them, though, was very good, so...
Does Australia use ITC, or do they have their own?
I think they...
I don't know.
I think it was an ETC.
Because that may be a factor in it, too.
Yeah. I don't know exactly what rules that they used. I'll have to look that up and answer that probably next episode. Besides that, there's not really much else for me to report on. I know I tested chain cannons. They're pretty decent. I had them on Chaos Space Marine squads, 5-man squads. I want to test them in a 10-man squad with 2. I think that's going to be the sweet spot for them. I haven't tested them as Havocs yet. I still feel like dropping four of them as Havocs is just asking for trouble. Their range is too small and they're too easy to kill. I doubt they'll ever get their points back. But protecting them behind eight Space Marine bodies, I think, is a lot easier, and it's still worth throwing Endless Cacophony on that kind of a unit. Because it's still a lot of shots.
I definitely think that the boogeyman of Havoc Squad with four chain cannons and Mark of Slaanesh is just that. It's a boogeyman. Yeah. I mean, you can use it, and it will obliterate anything, but at that point, it's like everything in the enemy's army is going to fight it.
Yeah.
And only five dudes with one wound and toughness five and a 3+ save.
Yeah.
They will die.
Congratulations, you just killed a 100-point boy squad with your almost 200-point Havoc Squad, and then they're going to die. So they just lost half their value.
Exactly.
I mean, it is what it is. I do think they can do work against unwary opponents. You drop them in, Endless Cacophony of them, delete two infantry squads, and then you let them die. But you got to hope that those two infantry squads at least outpoint what you just spent to kill them. So I do think there's other better uses for Havocs. I much prefer sitting them in the back, just lobbing autocannon shells and las cannon shots at the enemy. I think that's a much better use for them. I think
you could always start to delete elite units, because those always cost a lot more. So, like,
yeah, I don't know. A lot of the time, though, it's harder to get at the elite units because of screens. Yeah. I mean, the most efficient way to get Havocs in range is to Dreadclaw them in, or Termite Drill them in, or even just kind of walk them up. But at that point, they're still just firing at screens by the time they get to shoot. Yeah. So it's really hard. I mean, I'd much rather have them as Chaos Marine squads, because now I don't mind shooting that Chaos Marine squad at a screen, and now I'm ensuring that screen dies. So, and I could still Endless Cacophony it and kill another part of the screen. So I think, and those two chain cannons will hang around a lot longer because they have more bodies to protect them in front. So I'm definitely going to be doing a lot of testing with that configuration. Besides that, Abaddon's a beast. I've used him a few times. He hasn't really changed much, but he's just better now across his stat line, so he lives a little longer and he gets a lot of work done. I haven't had a chance yet to fool around with the Master of Possession. He's going to be next on my list. I've always just found he hasn't really fit into the kind of lists I run, which happen to be very aggressive and forward running. Master of Executions, haven't used him yet, but I actually have a list that includes him in it, so I'm going to test him.
You know, at first I thought he was garbage, because he wants to fight stuff and he has no invulnerable, but I mean, he's cheap enough and he does enough of a punch that it seems like he would be good if you had a couple of squads and like a character or something. Keep him like a bodyguard.
Yeah.
Something attacks, boom, he runs in and he beats the crap out of it.
Yeah. I was actually,
and if they kill him, ooh, you killed a 60-point guy.
Yeah. I was taking him just as a, because he was a filler. I had like 70 points left over, so I threw him in, and I was actually kind of excited to use him because I was going to throw him in a Rhino with Possessed and a Greater Possessed and kind of see where that goes, and a Master Possession. So, unit of 7, Possessed, and then Greater Possessed, Master Possession, and Master of Executions. So, it should be fun. I'll be curious to see how that goes. I'll definitely be reporting on here once I have more stuff tested and in there. I know I've been testing the Lord Discordant mostly because I really wanted to kind of get my fingers into him. And Obliterators and Havocs I've used a lot because I use a lot of Spearhead Detachments. Obliterators, like I said, are still great. I do think they're a little expensive. I'd rather see them at maybe 100 points. Even that is a little higher than I'd like, but I think that would be fair. 115, I just have trouble making room for them in lists. Chaos Marines are good. The new stratagems are great. The last thing I really want to touch on with the book, and one thing I've noticed, and I know, Wayne, I've talked to you about this before, is that I do feel like you're pushed to play Black Legion with all the new stuff. They get a lot of really cool stuff. Council of Traitors is great, and being able to, I know a lot of people don't like Bringers of Despair for the stratagem, because it's not really that great, and Terminators aren't that great, but there really is something to be said about being able to give a Sorcerer Terminator the Lord aura of reroll ones, being able to drop him with a unit of Terminators, give them prescience, and also reroll ones. So now you got a squad of Combi Plasma Terminators hitting on twos, rerolling ones, backed up by a sorcerer. They can really do a lot of work. You give them combi axes, you give them power axes, and they're still not that expensive. You charge them in, you do some wounds, you pop the stratagem, and then all of a sudden your opponent now has to take a pretty significant morale test. So I think there's something to be said there. Black Legion comes with a lot of really cool stratagems too. Being able to just deny a person from scoring an objective is great. Their trait is good. Abaddon is great. Like, I always feel like I want to use Abaddon. The plus 2 CP is really awesome. He's a beast in his own right. His auras are great. So he's really cool. And Black Legion, I know for a lot of people this game is just it's a your dudes thing. You do whatever you want. And I know there are cases where Legions will get out of their comfort zone and use units that you otherwise wouldn't think they would have used, even in the lore. But a lot of times you're kind of, you want to be real fluffy. And I know, like, say you play Iron Warriors, like, you want to use those obliterators, you want to use Havocs, you want to use tanks, and you don't really want to use Possessed, because, you know, Iron Warriors are supposed to not really like the demonic, although there are instances in the lore where obviously there's exceptions for everything. But, I mean, there are general archetypes that each Legion kind of carries around that, you know, this is what they tend to use and this is what they tend not to use. Black Legion doesn't have those archetypes, so even from, like, a lore perspective, and even if you're just trying to justify, you want to be able to justify your list and run it however you want, it'd still be fluffy. Black Legion has that ability. So I like Black Legion for that matter. I think it gives you a lot of flexibility in what you can run. Its stratagems are great. Having a lot of them closed off if you don't go them kind of stinks. So I definitely see the appeal to running Black Legion over something else. I would like to see all the Legions get that level of love, but I don't think it's going to happen. Black Legion is just the poster boys of chaos, much like Ultramarines are to Loyalists. So, but those are my thoughts on that. I don't know.
Yeah, I agree. I mean, I definitely think that it's sort of, I get mixed signals from GW because they keep talking about you should pick what calls to you, whether you read a story about it or you like the lore, you like the color scheme, whatever. But then the rules encourage you to mix and match. And personally, I find it, the size of game that 40K is, I don't like having, you know, a battalion of this and a spearhead of that and a, you know, supreme command of this other thing, and they're all different legions. It doesn't make sense to me. So I like the fact that, like you said, Black Legion, even in the fluff, you can pretty much justify anything you want because it's literally anyone in Chaos, as long as they swear allegiance to Abaddon, can get into the Black Legion. Yep. So you can have all the cults side by side because they're all part of the same group.
Yeah. Yeah, and I think that's one of the biggest selling points of Black Legion and one of the things I like the most about it. I know with my army, I was kicking around the idea of making an arm and a shoulder plaid black and gold, just so I could run them as Black Legion, which I do think I'm going to do. And it even makes sense from a lore perspective, which is just another bonus in Black Legion's box, that not all the time are they black and gold. I mean, even in the lore, oftentimes a lot of these Legionnaires will keep their original colors and only have, like, maybe some symbology or maybe just a shoulder pad painted. And so it could be shown in a lot of different ways being a part of Black Legion. So I think that's pretty cool. But those are my final thoughts for the day. Just some thoughts about the Chaos Codex, the Big Fact, just some things I've been testing around with. I think it all warrants a lot more testing, so I'll be sure to come back and give some more thoughts as time goes on. This has been episode 10 of Cast of Dice. I'd like to thank everybody for coming out and listening to us bullshit for a little while. It's always fun to get on here and talk about the things we love. This hobby has brought me a lot of joy. My work life is hectic. I know Wayne's is. Draco, I know you're always working too. I mean, we've all got stressful lives. This game brings us a lot of joy, so it's always nice to come on here and talk about the game with people who also enjoy the game a lot. I know a lot of you aren't going to agree with my thoughts or Wayne's thoughts or Draco's thoughts, and that's fine. I mean, feel free to leave your thoughts in the comments, and by any means, I'll be sure to reply to them at any point. I mean, I love when people want to discuss certain things, and we may never change each other's minds, but hey, that's the great thing about this game. We all have different opinions. We can play it however we want. I mean, that's just Warhammer for you. So again, I'm Joe with Cast of Dice with Wayne and Draco. You guys have a good week and keep on wargaming.